Hey everyone, welcome back to our weekly Support Ops Hangout. I'm your host, Chase Clemens. This is a weekly show that focuses all about the customer. So we talk customer support, customer service, customer experience, whatever phrase you're using to call interacting with your customers, that's what we're talking about. I'm joined every week by our wonderful panel here. We're going to start with Carolyn. Carolyn, how are things out your way?
They are wonderful. We just got back from our every 5 month retreat. I don't know if there's a more efficient word for that, but we were in New York City and it was amazing and I'm glad to be back.
There's definitely got to be a word for 5 months. I mean, we have like the fortnight phrase. Surely there's one for 5 months.
I'll ask the British people.
You call it twice a year.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we've got Jeff Vincent from Wistia. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Chase. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And I will make one plug for Buffer here because they're hiring a just really awesome customer role. Carolyn, do you want to talk about that real quick? I mean, you know, just to open, you know, get the word out there about this new job.
Which role are you talking about? Is this a growth hacker?
Yeah, it was the one I saw. I don't know if it came out through the Buffer tweet or if I saw Leo or who it was, but technically it was called, I put it in my notes, where was it? Buffer Customer Development and UX Researcher.
That's right. Okay, so we have a new sort of product team layout, which has a bunch of different pieces to it. And one of those pieces is like researcher, customer development person who literally gets on the phone with customers all the time and tries to understand where their pain points are and how we can solve them, usually around one particular topic. So someone like that will say, okay, we're focusing on scheduling this week to figure out like why it's confusing or how we can improve it, and then get on tons of customer calls and advise the product team and the development team after that. So yeah, there's probably like 10 other moving parts to that role, but that's the biggest one. So yeah, it's a cool one. We're excited to hire for that.
Yeah. So if that sounds like you, make sure to check out their blog post. I think you got to email Leo or something like that, but they've got it all on their blog and all. For today, we're talking about something that ironically enough, it's almost like a Buffer episode or something like that. It's something that I saw in Carolyn's monthly happiness reports a couple of months back. I think it was June, July, something like that. And they were talking about how they had just started using this priority system in their support ticket. So they would let their customers pick basically their own priority level. And just to give you an example of how they did this, so Buffer specifically has this little drop-down menu that says, please choose how urgent this is to you. And then they list from, this is a casual question all the way up to emergency. This is a critical issue. And the customer can pick and have that tagged when it comes into their system. One kind of cool thing here with the emergency, with the tickets that were tagged with emergency, those automatically get posted to the HipChat room as well. So there's this added sense of, you know, hey, make sure you get this. Yeah, so that's what we're talking about today. Priorities for tickets, letting customers choose it like that themselves rather than relying on some kind of internal prioritization or something like that on our end. And we'll see how it goes. So Carolyn, you know, since this is Buffer's idea, how did this idea come about? Like who was just sitting there one day and was like, hey, we should try this?
Oh, I can't remember who. Somebody other than me, one of the heroes for sure, made the comment that they do this anyway. So customers naturally sort of prioritize themselves anyway by the subject line. So, you know, all caps, or they write the word urgent, or they say like, help, please, or some other way that's somewhat informal and obviously subjective, but, you know, they were kind of letting us know, oh, this is just no big deal, just an FYI, all the way up to, I'm panicking, in which case the subject line is sometimes call me. and the heroes were picking through those anyway. Generally, they go, you know, oldest to newest, unless there's one that just absolutely stands out that needs help. So it was kind of happening naturally, and so we just thought we'd make it a little bit simpler and give people a chance to sort of try it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's one of those where it was kind of new for me because with Basecamp, we don't do any. We have a couple of priority labels, you know, if like somebody writes in and says, you know, I can't access my account, that one gets automatically tagged on our end as something a little bit higher priority than something like a feature request. But, you know, we were looking at 2 to 3 minute response times. And at that point, it doesn't really matter how you prioritize things. They're just getting answered that quick. Jeff, Wistia, we were talking about this a little before the show. Wistia doesn't do any kind of prioritization like this, right?
No, I mean, like Carolyn said, there's that natural prioritization that happens where you go through and you see someone who wrote urgent and you maybe take a minute just to read it over to make sure it actually is or isn't urgent. And sometimes it actually is. We also have our emergency email address, which we give out on the weekends. And some people will choose the middle of the week to try to send something to an emergency through the emergency channel, and then they find out that that doesn't work. I guess at a higher level, one of the other things that I remember people asking, and maybe you wanted to get there later, Chase, was prioritization in terms of like the type of customer that you are. So are you a paying customer? How much do you pay? Are you on an old plan, a new plan? You know, are you on the new version of Basecamp, the old version of Basecamp, like all of that stuff? You could see how you might prioritize all of those things. We don't do anything like that either. I think that both of those angles around prioritization are interesting to talk about. I think what Carolyn said made a lot of sense, that people already do all of this stuff where they write urgent or they write their subject line in all caps, and giving them a drop-down menu to choose the level of their issue might make them feel a little bit more emotionally in control of the situation. It's like, I've let them know that this is a big, big deal and I didn't have to write in all caps. So it might start the conversation off on a better foot. We don't do anything explicit around that. Not at this point. Although now she's got me thinking about it.
See, and that's the whole point of the show. We just want to get you thinking about doing something a little different. But, you know, with this, the first question that popped in my mind when I was prepping for the show, Carolyn, was with these customers, do you find that they're picking the appropriate things, or do you find customers marking things as, you know, this is an emergency, but it's really not?
No, I haven't seen that. I think people have been overwhelmingly picking, you know, picking the right thing is sort of tough to quantify, because sometimes, you know, my posts going out to Facebook are not going is an emergency for some people, and sometimes it's not for others. So I think, you know, it just kind of depends on the situation. So, you know, somebody might say, I can't log in, this is an emergency, and some people might not choose emergency. So it's hard to know exactly which is right. But I would say, you know, just from the overall perspective, we've had not an overwhelming percentage of those have been marked as urgent, or like emergency. So it does seem like the system is kind of working mostly.
And, you know, one of the things Jeff alluded to earlier, it came up on Twitter today from Mark. Mark was asking us if, you know, when we prioritize these tickets, is there any kind of distinction in there between, you know, non-paying customers, paying customers, and even like internal, like, you know, somebody in your company emails into support to get help with something. That might be a little bit more applicable if you're talking like 200-300 people in the company, not like 40 like we are. But
it does happen.
Yeah. So with Buffer, is there any distinction between the free versus paying customers here? Do the paying customers get bumped up with the prioritization when you figure that out?
No, they don't. Although I will say that sometimes people start out with, I'm a paying customer. And so I think paying customers somewhat naturally believe that they will get or deserve faster or better service. So they might, this is just a guess. I don't actually have any data to support this, but now I'm going to look into it. Those people might just naturally choose the higher priority levels. because they might believe that they are higher priority because they're paying customers, and they can see our numbers, so they know that there's only 2% of the customers who are paying. But unless it's self-selection, then it's not happening because we don't do any sort of prioritization on that level. Other than like kind of what I mentioned we were doing before, which is like, as you look in the inbox, if you see a customer who you know is like having some trouble, or you've given, you know, a hellish time to in the past and you want to make sure they're having a better experience, or like it's one of your highest paying business customers, like sometimes I'm guilty of snatching those out and checking into them before it's really their turn.
Yeah, it kind of bumps me in a little bit on this because, you know, with our shows, I like to go back and talk about, you know, here's what Buffer's doing, here's what Wistia's doing, here's what Basecamp is doing, and we're just not doing really any prioritization with those. You know, we talk about paying customers here with our annual plan. That's our biggest plan that's paid on an annual basis. We do offer what's called premium support with that, so you do get bumped to the head of the line when that priority tag gets applied inside of our desk.com system. But, you know, it's one of those, again, 2 to 3 minute response times, like you're getting bumped up 2 minutes, which isn't a huge impact. You know, you might see more of an impact if you're looking at longer response times or, you know, higher loads of cases compared to us. Jeff, you mentioned earlier that she had you thinking about this a little bit. Why are you thinking about implementing something like this at Wistia, and why should other people be thinking about it?
Well, I'll make the case for why even Basecamp should think about it, despite the fact that your response times are outrageously low. It can be very difficult for me sometimes to read the emotion of somebody who reaches out in support. Because some people, I mean, we all deal with global audiences. For example, a lot of times when I talk to somebody from like the UK, they're super dry. They're super dry about everything. They're enthused about Wistia, and yet in their emails, it sounds like take it or leave it. Like they really don't like us all that much. And then, you know, we'll go through this whole interaction where I'm like, man, this guy hates us. And then his last email will be like, by the way, like, you know, love you guys, cheers, and it's a picture of him in his Wistia t-shirt. Like, that's the type of interaction you might have. So we look at issues each week broken down by the tags that we apply. So what are our biggest issues, you know, billing or uploading in our case or something like that. You know, how do we identify what the biggest issues are? If we added another layer, which was also what percentage of people think that they're having emergency issues? That might lead us to say, man, response times are really, really, really important to our customer base. Or to say, you know, actually, it seems like we're hitting it pretty well right now. And that most people, you know, a faster response time wouldn't actually make people that much happier. It just gives you, I mean, that's sort of one example, but I think it gives you more insight into what the emotional state of people who are writing it is. Do they think of, you know, you could sort of pair these things up. So do they think of their uploading issues as emergencies? Do they think of their, you know, in our case, customization issues as non-emergencies? Then you know where you need to spend your, you know, your reliability engineering time. You need to spend it on uploading, because people tend to think of that as a major emergency. So I don't know. It just has me thinking about the possibilities for what we might discover. It doesn't necessarily guarantee what we will discover.
Yeah. Can I add a thought to that?
It's your show. Go right ahead.
One thought that that was struck from Jeff is like he said, sometimes we have trouble reading people in their email. And definitely we have that UK experience that you described. And so we used to have like smiley, and unhappy faces where you could choose. I mean, we still have them at the end of the email where you can say like, how was your experience? But we used to have them in the contact form. And we didn't find that it really helped that much, because we can tell from language when people are happy, generally, and we can tell generally when they're not. We had even a few people, you know, you hovered over the frowny face and it said sad or something. And we had a couple of people writing in and say like, I'm not sad, I'm furious, or like sad wasn't really a strong, like sad or angry weren't really either right to, it's not really that they're sad. It's just that they want this solved now. So yeah, we shifted from that because that data wasn't all that useful. But yeah, to Jeff's point, I think the data that we can get, like pairing up which issues are prioritized more highly, could really make a bigger difference than, okay, we'll just try and bring our response time down by like a minute. So yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I think there's a good distinction here in, you know, we're talking about the emotional state of the customer, and a sad, neutral, or frown face conveys, it doesn't have the same kind of impact that picking how important you think your issue is. In both cases, we're still getting to the emotional aspect of all this. You know, if somebody's having an emergency, they're probably freaking out a little bit anxious, that kind of thing. So you're still getting the emotion part. But I think, I don't know, is this like a case of us, you know, people just trying to be too cutesy at that point, do you think? Like, you know, we're just trying to be too cute with faces rather than just putting in there, you know, like how serious is this?
Wait, say that again. Are you talking about the choosing as you're submitting the issue or choosing in response to the support you've received?
Yeah, choosing as you submit the issue. We're not really worried about the tail end of all this. But, you know, if I go to a buffer site, you know, and I see, you know, is my ticket an emergency or is it more something like a casual question? That feels more... it feels more like a real transaction rather than another site asking me, hey, are you feeling happy, green smiley face, or are you feeling sad right now?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that you do want to probably stay out of that zone. That being said, I mean, the goal of at least some of this is to save people time and effort and to give them that shortcut. So for example, if you can just choose from a dropdown, this is an urgent issue, you don't need to sort of try to convince the support person that you don't even know that they need to pay attention to this and this is an urgent issue. I think that very often that is what people spend the first couple paragraphs of their support emails doing when they're really freaking out. So saving them that time is pretty nice. And I've certainly found that, or at least I certainly feel that if we put... you know, how did this make you feel? Good, medium, bad, as opposed to the three faces that we include thanks to the Temper app that we use, you'd get a lot fewer clicks on the text links. You get a lot more clicks on the graphics. So it's just about saving them time and like trying to encourage people to take those actions that inform the support person a little bit better.
Yeah, and you know, the last thing I just want to touch on briefly here, because I think we've got a pretty good overview of the prioritization from the customer standpoint here. The last thing I want to touch on is those cases that are specifically emergencies. You know, buffer, when you mark it as an emergency, it gets thrown into HipChat. There's a notification there for somebody to pick it up. You mentioned, Jeff, that Wistia has the emergency email address on the weekends for people to use, not throughout the week, but on the weekends. How effective has that email address been? Like if I email in whatever the emergency address is, am I going to get a reply back from you quicker than, you know, that Monday?
On the weekends?
Yeah, on the weekends.
Yeah, yes, you are. You're definitely going to get a response from us. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm sitting by my computer waiting for an emergency email to come in. But I will say that when I see one, which happens on average maybe two times a weekend, I tend to think to myself, like, you know, this must be someone's in sort of a dire straits. A lot of times it's that we tend to have the assumption that the business week is when the business gets done. But for some people, they're like, hey, Sunday night is like my prime time for getting people to pay attention. So this isn't working the way I would have expected. I kind of need help. And so it's good to have the emergency email there because otherwise they'd be swallowed up in the, you know, possibly 40 to 50 other emails that we would get normally on a Saturday that are not that important. They're people who are just testing us out and they're not going to be especially delighted between getting a response that Saturday and getting a response on Monday. That was something that we learned over the first 3.5 years of of providing customer support. But that being said, I guess I just wanted to come back to the idea that there are some people who do legitimate business on a Sunday, so they would really love to get our support. And it's nice to be able to give them an option to give us a heads up on that. I think the idea of pushing emergency emails also into HipChat is a good one. Another way to raise the visibility of those issues, which I think is good.
Yeah, you should, push it into your chat tool, whatever you're using, put like big red explosion icon emojis or something next to it so everybody sees it. Carolyn, for companies that don't do weekend support, that are working like Wistia Monday through Friday, typical business hours, do you think they should be looking at some kind of emergency contact way, some kind of emergency contact method that their customers could use?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I'm thinking back to what we did before we had weekenders, and we mostly just opened up the inbox one or two times on the weekend and scanned and picked out a few of the most hysterical and answered them. So a more efficient way to do that is awesome. I would say one sort of thing to think about, and a slight challenge we've had with this, is that if you do offer this emergency option, then it does set expectations. People do think, okay, I chose emergency, that means they're going to get back to me immediately. We had a really interesting experience. We were just on retreat all together in New York, and so we were all in the same time zone, and we were all taking the same days off, like weekend, or at least Saturday. We all took Saturday off. And so somebody wrote in and marked it as emergency, and that person didn't hear back until like many hours later. And then a few days after that, when we were all back on our respective time zones, that same customer wrote in and put like an FYI, and we got back to him within like 30 minutes. And he was understandably really confused by that. And he was like, what's the point of the system if when it was an emergency, I didn't get a response, and when it was an FYI, I got one immediately. So that's something I didn't really think about in advance. And retreats are rare. They're like 3 to 4 weeks out of the year. So I don't know, maybe at Christmas time and other things like that, it matters. But that's just something to think about, is like kind of have to be willing to commit on some level to giving that priority. I wouldn't just throw it up and just start it without kind of thinking about what that would mean and how to plan for that.
One thing I will say is that going into our emergency email channel experiment, which I guess is now just part of our practice, it's not really an experiment anymore. I was really worried about what you were talking about, or what you were trying to get at earlier, Chase, which was lots of people would elect themselves to be emergency issues. And we don't, I guess one thing I would say is that we don't make it like super easy to do that. So in the buffer case, as you're submitting your initial request, you mark it as an emergency. It's a checkbox. It's not a checkbox. It's like a drop down, but it's like two clicks and now you're an emergency. In our system, you would send in an email, you get a autoresponder that says, we're not in the office, and on weekends we try to not be at our computers. And then somewhere near the middle to bottom of that email, it will mention, we do have online resources that you can check out if you really need to get at us, if it's an emergency. And then I think we give an example of what an emergency would be. Like, you can email us, and then it includes our names on this emergency email channel. So they're not exactly equal. But I will say that I continue to be very impressed by the number of people who email in, get the autoresponder, and then reply again and say, like, I hope you guys love, enjoy your weekends. This is not a big issue. And then the number of people who say, I've given this some thought. I do think that it rises to the level of an emergency. I'd really appreciate it if you could get back to me. And we've never had anybody from that emergency email scenario who's been upset if we got back to them like 2 or 3 hours later, because we set the expectation that the alternative is Monday. So they're pretty thrilled actually to get support on a Saturday.
Yeah. So, we've talked a lot about having this info on the ticket form, submission form itself. Wistia with the emergency email address, you know, it's a direct link there. Carolyn, is most of your customer tickets captured through that support form? Like what, you know, if I just email in support@buffer.com, I guess I'm missing out on that chance to tell you if it's an emergency without, you know, using language in my ticket, I guess.
Yes, that's true. I should know, but I don't know what percentage come in. But let me pull up one thing really fast and I can probably answer it really, really fast. Okay, priority tags. Okay, so on our happiness dashboard, you can see our priority tags. And so for the month of September so far, a full 73% of them are not tagged.
So 73% are not tagged. That seems like a lot.
Yeah. And you don't have to tag it from, like, it's not a required field in the contact form. So I'm not sure what percentage of these are people who didn't tag it or people who wrote in, but just separately. But yeah, it definitely, that's true. It doesn't encapsulate everybody by a long shot.
Yeah, I think, you know, in that case, having a separate emergency email address is probably the best route for people to do that kind of thing. And then maybe have, you know, if you can with your support form, if somebody selects that emergency thing, then maybe it emails that emergency email address to make it a little bit nicer on the back end. But I mean, that's one of those, no solution, you know, no ticket that you ticket form that you create is ever going to get everybody. And that's just how it is at the end of the day. That's just how it is. So last question for the show. Scott pinged me a minute ago and had a good question. What do y'all think about, you know, this kind of automatic or computer prioritization? You know, is it worth it for you to set up rules inside of your help system that automatically applies priority based on keywords or time of day or anything like that? Jeff, we'll let you tackle that one first.
This is the first I've ever heard of such a thing.
Really? Y'all use Help Scout route, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if Help Scout, I know with Desk, you can tell it to look for certain phrases, like call me, and that will assign a label, a priority to it. If it sees.
You put a high or a low priority on the call me.
It kind of is just kind of a middle of the ground level 5. Desk goes from like 1 to 10, so it's like just 5.
Okay. I have no response to this. I don't know that it would be particularly useful for that. I think it might be nice for auto tagging, because I know it probably stinks that I just suck out loud at tagging my emails when I do jump in there and try to provide some good support. I'll get like 20 emails deep and realize I haven't tagged a single one, and then I'm too lazy to go back. So that might be nice, but also you're going to end up with tag soup where you have like 50 tags that all are the same thing. So I don't know. It's going to be really, really tough for that to work well enough for me to be impressed by it. But yeah, I think if you can put your support in buckets like that, like, you should totally go to whatever depths you can to reduce the amount of work that your customer champions have to do.
So Carolyn, I think Carolyn uses Buffer uses Help Scout too, right?
We do.
Yeah. Any kind of, I guess a good phrase to use for all this, any sentiment analysis going on, you know, you see it a lot with Twitter, like social media kind of stuff. Like, are people loving on Pepsi this week or are they hating on it? And they look at keywords there. But is there any reason to be doing that kind of thing with emails?
Is there any reason? Might be interesting. I'm not particularly partial to the Net Promoter Score. I wonder if like automatically sensing the types of emails that people write, like the people who are in contact with you, how are they as a group feeling compared to last week and the week before and the week before, might be useful to see, you know, what changes your engineers are making impact things for better or for worse, or for better more or for better less. But there's probably a lot more you could do I mean, there's probably a lot of things you could do before that. So yeah, we use auto tagging for like the different subjects. Like, you know, if they write into the iPhone app, then we auto tag it iPhone. So, you know, yeah, we have a bunch of tags, and anything that saves people, you know, 3 seconds is great. So we do use auto tagging for that kind of stuff, and we tag the language and just a couple different things. But yeah, we don't do sentiment analysis other than a love tag, because a lot of stuff doesn't fall into an actual question.
Nice. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I'm kind of hesitant of trusting computers to do that kind of stuff. I think, especially if this is something that your company's not doing yet, and you just want to kind of throw it out there and see if it's going to work, putting it on the support ticket form is probably just the best way to go and let customers try it out themselves. Yeah, so that's all the big stuff I wanted to touch on. Anything else you want to hit before we move on?
I think we did a whole show once on the whole like free versus customer, paying customer, free customer versus paying customer prioritization. Feel like we've done a show on that before, but I guess I'd be interested to do another one, only because I certainly have, there are always lingering questions for me about how other people do it. Should we do it? Personally, I don't think we should at all. I think that that's a really good way to not give our free customers great support, right? Because they're just kind of like, oh, you know, once you're done with all these paying ones, of which there are many, 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 maybe you'll get around to the free ones, so they have a horrible experience. But perhaps if their expectation going into it is it's free, so therefore I'll never get support, and then if I upgrade, I get support, you know, does that strengthen our premium offerings? I don't know. So I would be interested to get some sort of like mailbag episode about that, where people can tell us why we're wrong, or tell me specifically why I'm wrong about this or why I'm right about it. I would love to hear that.
Yeah, well, there it is. So you just picked our show topic for next week. I vaguely recall doing, maybe it was just like one of the rapid fires or something where we touched on it briefly. I'm going to look through our show notes and see if we did a full show on. If we did, I'll put it in this episode's show notes. But yeah, so we'll talk about that next week. Free versus paying customers. Do you treat them any differently? Do you prioritize the paying customers over the free ones? Let us know what you're thinking on that one. Let us know what your company is doing. supportops.co/question. That'll get you to the message form where you can let us know what you're doing and why we should be doing it your way, because your way is the best. So with that, that brings us to the best part of this show each week. It's this week's shout-outs. These are the things that are making us happy, so happy that we're going to shout them from the rooftops and the mountaintops and let you know, hey, you should be using these things. So Carolyn, we'll start with you. Carolyn, what are you shouting out this week?
Okay, my computer's about to die. So I'll talk fast. this feels sort of like a fraud with this one, because I have not personally used it, but I just got the most glowing review from Daniel on my team about it. So I'm going to shout them out. Reflector for Mac, I guess, is a program that he's used a ton to send screenshots and give instructions for mobile apps right on his computer, so he can like take a screenshot of what he's looking at, not like have to go over to your phone, take a screenshot, email it to yourself, like then have, you know, do all that kind of stuff. So he highly recommended that if you're supporting a mobile app.
Awesome. Jeff, what are you shouting out this week?
So first I have to first anti-shout out I think I've ever delivered. iPhone 6 Plus. Stupid.
Just not a fan, huh?
Who would be? Two iPhones? That's the most anti-Apple thing I've ever heard.
They did two iPhones last time.
That's horrible. No, a 5S and a 5C is totally different.
Same form size, I guess. Going to that 6 Plus, I've seen lots of people talking about it. It's the weight is, you know, just off. It feels top heavy. I don't know. So you picked one up and just didn't like it?
That's terrible. I'm definitely not going to get one. The camera's not even flush with the case, the body anymore. Like, this is just, it's falling apart at the seams. It's ridiculous. All that being said, let's get to my shout out. It's an oldie but a goodie by Jason Fried, and the name of the post is, I want to make sure I get it right. It's The Obvious, The Easy, and The Possible. I've read this probably like 3 or 4 times in the last couple of days. It is a really, really, really great post about web products and how web products should work, and how instead of thinking about like, oh, what's like high priority and priority for feature wise, you're thinking you're layering on another set of criteria, which is what things should be obvious for our app to do, what things should be easy for our app to do, and what things should be possible for our customers to achieve using our app. So it's just funny how that's kind of intuitive to everybody, especially people providing support, but this framework does add this layer of like vocabulary that I think is really great. So you may say something like, nope, this is something that needs to be obvious. It totally changes the way that you might talk about this with a designer or a developer that you're working with. And I love that. So check out that post. It's from 2011. So it's like not 1 foot in the grave, but it's really, really good.
Nah, the best articles are those that you can look back 5 years later and be like, yeah, this is still relevant.
I find that Jason Fried's got a lot of them.
So with my shout out this week, I'm going to give it to a new site from the fine folks over at Radio Point. It's called Happy Endings. It's kind of like a Product Hunt, but more for customer support stuff. So sharing links to articles and resources and apps and all that, all centered around customer support, customer service done right. So make sure to check it out, happyendings.radiopoint.com. The URL could be a little bit nicer, but I get why they did that. So check that out. I'll have that and all the other things we talked about in the show notes when we post this episode shortly. Make sure to let us know what you think about free versus paying customers. We're going to tackle that topic next week, so you can all write in and let Jeff know just how utterly wrong he is on something. Nothing, Jeff? You're just going to go with that?
Sure, yeah, let me know. I can't wait to hear about it. Let me know how awesome your iPhone 6 Plus fits in your hand and how an iPhone 6 regular would never do.
Gotta have that extra screen space.
I want to meet somebody who has an iPad mini and an iPhone 6 Plus and loves and uses them both.
Yeah, no
way. The only one I've seen of the Plus is, yay, now I can sell my mini. But I've only read one review.
Wait. If you need more, look up what's her name? Michael Strahan does a morning show, and she used to do Regis and Kelly Ripa. Kelly. So they on the show, Michael Strahan and Kelly Ripa had the iPhone 6 Plus, and in his hand, it looks normal. for context, Michael Strahan was a football player for a really long time. The phone covers her entire face.
Face phone.
You could use it as a mirror or a selfie machine, I guess. Like, it's terrible.
That's the most vehement anti shout out ever. You feel better now?
Not really. I'm not even that kind of person with Apple stuff. I normally am just kind of like, whatever, it's not a big deal. But I see that as being such a horrible. They just didn't want to make a tough decision about what kind of phone to make, so they made two.
Please write in and let us know why he's wrong on that one too. I just want to know. I'm one of those. I'm gonna have to wait until I get into an Apple store to actually hold both of them in my hand. And I'm just not worried about it. Just not worried about doing that this month. So, let us know.
Apple stock.
Let us know, supportops.co/question. That's where you can get a message over to us. We'll have show notes up shortly. And then we'll tackle that topic next week about free versus paying customers. Other than that, I'm Chase. Have an awesome week.
Go buy an iPhone 6 Plus.